So we were speaking about our soul, and to be more specific, our souls in plural, because we discovered that we have two souls. We have a godly soul and an animalistic soul. And we spoke about the two souls, explaining that our godly soul is actually a part of God. It is a piece of God which is sent into my body. I possess actual peace of God. I'm possessed by God. You know, they say there's two ghosts are sitting in a jail cell, and one of them is saying, I've been arrested for burglary. What are you here for? The other one says, for possession. We are possessed by God. We have a godly soul within us. And then there is another soul, which is an animalistic soul. And this animalistic soul, it's not bad. It's just animalistic. It wants what an animal wants. It wants to eat, sleep, have a comfortable life, enjoy itself, and have fun. And the struggle within us is between these two souls. And a very important topic, if you remember, we mentioned that it's not a struggle between good and evil. In most of the literature around the world, you read about a struggle between good and evil. Most religions talk to you about a struggle between good and evil. The Torah is teaching us about a struggle which is going on inside of us, and it's not a struggle between good and evil. It's a struggle between godly and selfish. If you remember, in the very beginning, we were speaking about our traits, who we are, and I asked if people are good or bad, and somebody said people are bad because they're selfish. And I asked, well, is being selfish a bad thing? And some people said right away yes, and some people said right away no, and that's how I knew I have a Jewish audience, because we were already disagreeing. And it's true, because on one hand, selfishness and greed lead people to doing bad things, but then also selfishness could push people towards good things as well. A person can give a large donation to a local hospital because he wants his name to be printed in big letters everywhere. He's doing it purely for PR, for no other reason. He couldn't care less about the sick. But in reality, people are getting healed. He did a great thing, and maybe he did something that no one else in town was able to do, because no one else is as wealthy as he is. And he's the only one who was able to build this new wing of the hospital. And because of him, people are going to be saved now. But he did it purely for selfish reasons, for greed, because he wanted to have his name printed in big letters everywhere. I can't blame him. I want to have my name to be printed in big letters everywhere also. I just don't have the money to give to the hospital. That's it. That's the only difference between us. So the struggle is between godly and animalistic, selfless and selfish. And selfless things, godly things, are only good by definition. Selfish things can be good or can be bad. Animalistic things can be causing very good behavior. Animalistic desires could be causing good behavior. We spoke about how people teach their kids, you have to be honest, because if you will be dishonest, nobody's going to trust you and you won't be able to do business with anyone. So you have to be honest for what reason? For selfish reason. You have to respect others, because the more you respect others, the more people respect you in return. So why do you have to respect others? For selfish reasons. This whole idea of social contracts, so to say, that was invented in the secular world to replace the concept of morality. The idea that you need to behave a certain way, so if the entire society behaves this way, then the society is better. So it's like an unspoken contract that people have entered in as soon as they became members of the society, that, you know, we don't steal, we don't murder, and we are dealing honestly with each other, and that's called a social contract. So this way the society can function. Sounds great, but then why I'm not going to be stealing? Why I'm not going to be murdering? Why I'm going to be honest? Because I want to be in a society which is honest. I want to live in a better society. So what is the reason why I'm entering the social contract? For my selfish reasons. All this is good and fine. Selfish reasons can lead to very good, proper, moral behavior. The only thing they cannot do, they cannot lead you to godly behavior. So we have this world that can be good, moral, safe, proper, without God. This world can function this way. It will be lacking only one thing: godliness, spirituality. And the Torah says that our purpose in this world is to bring godliness in here. This is when we need to start utilizing our godly soul. And this is why we are pushed to do mitzvahs by what? By our godly soul. And this is why the Torah is telling us that in reality, if you look at the world around us, when they speak about this concept of social contract and morality, which is outside of the godly realm, they're right. Their mission is to create a just society. That's fine. We Jews have a different mission. Our mission is to make this world godly. And for that, we need to use our godly soul. And that's why we need to be performing mitzvahs. Now, the interesting thing is that if you will look about all of the isms and all of the theories that were created around the world, especially past, you know, 2-3 centuries, you will see that many of them are banking on person's selflessness, no pun intended. They are counting on people doing good just for the sake of good. They are counting on people being altruistic. The most famous one is Marxism. What did Marx believe? That money makes people greedy. So if you will eliminate money, people will not be greedy anymore, and then this world will be perfect. And the idea was that people will be working just because they know they have to make an effort to help the society. That's why they'll go to work in the morning, every single morning. And they'll be working their hardest. Why? Just because it's the right thing to do. Now, you are scratching your head now thinking, what was this guy smoking? Does he really think that people are going to be working just as hard and as honestly without any anticipation of any benefit? Is it possible? Well, guess what? Karl Marx was Jewish, and that explains everything. He had this Jewish soul that enables him to be altruistic. He was looking at himself, and he was thinking that the whole world is just like himself, just like him. And that's about it. Every other altruistic theory out there was created by Jews. But in reality, outside of Judaism, anticipation of pure selflessness is unrealistic, because people usually tend to do things that benefit them. Now, Jews also tend to do things that benefit them, but we at least have a capability of doing something else. How often do we end up using this capability? Not very often. How much of your brain capacity do you use during your lifetime? They say like under 10%. And what happens with the other 90%+ of my brain? Just sitting there. That's embarrassing. I can be 10 times as smarter. Jacob was talking about reading all of these books here. If you use even 50% of your brain, you could read every single book in here. Just, we humans, I guess, don't like using our resources. That's just how we are. We are lazy. So the same thing is with your godly soul. It's sitting there. Use it. You could use it 100% of the time. We don't. Why? Whenever I'm performing a mitzvah, now for the holidays, I'm going to be going to shul, I'm going to be davening, I'm going to be having a Yom Tov meal, and I'm going to be hearing shofar. That's a mitzvah, and I am going to be doing this by utilizing my godly soul. That's wonderful. But there's so many things out today that I'm doing which are not driven by godly soul. So that's why we have this struggle. So this was the first part that we spoke about. Then we spoke about how our souls are expressing themselves in this world. And we said that our souls have what we called clothing, levushim, and the levushim are speech, thought, and action. In other words, our souls, both souls, can express themselves in three ways. They can cause us to think something. If I'm thinking about eating steamed crabs, then this thought is not caused by my godly soul, I promise. If I'm thinking about going to shul, that thought is caused by my godly soul. So the first level of expression that my soul has, either one of my souls, is thought. Then speech. I say things. Sometimes I say stupid things, and sometimes I say very stupid things. Once in a while, really rarely, I say smart things. So if whatever I'm saying is Torah related or mitzvah related, if I'm saying whatever I'm saying for the purpose of serving God, then this is my speech, which is powered by my godly soul. If I'm talking about a ball game or about which car model I like better, then it is powered by my animalistic soul. Again, animalistic doesn't mean bad. It just means animalistic. Well, yes, any transgression is caused by my animalistic soul. A transgression cannot be caused by a godly soul. A transgression can be only caused and powered by my animalistic soul. So, yes, whenever somebody does something wrong according to the Torah, this action or this speech is being powered by my animalistic soul. But the point that I'm trying to make here, which is very important, that not only transgressions are powered by my animalistic soul. There's nothing wrong with talking about car models and ball game. Nothing wrong with it. The Torah, I can promise you, none of these books, you will finish reading all of them, nowhere in the Torah will you find thou shalt not speak about car models. No such a thing. It's not a transgression. But it is a speech which is formed, powered, and caused by my animalistic soul. And then there is also action. I have actions which are caused and powered by my animalistic soul. Then I have actions which are caused and powered by my godly soul. And that's something which is more obvious because we are very well aware of different actions we do. If I decide to put on tefillin, that's an action which is caused by my godly soul. If I decide to punch somebody in the nose because he made me angry, that's an action which is caused by my animalistic soul. Even though I really want to think that sometimes punching somebody in the nose is a mitzvah. But for some reason, most of rabbis disagree with me. I'm still looking for some big rabbi who'll permit me to punch somebody in the nose, but I haven't found one yet, so I guess I'm stuck for now. Still looking, still working on it. Now, all of this was a refresher of our previous conversations. Now, let's move forward. There is a story about the Alter Rebbe, who was the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, sitting in his room, and his little grandson, Tzemach Tzedek, his name was Menachem Mendel, but he later on became known as Tzemach Tzedek because this was the name of the book he wrote. So his grandson, a little boy, is running into the room. I think he was like 3 years old. And he climbs up on his grandfather's lap. And his grandfather decides to test the boy's wisdom. The grandson, sitting on his grandfather's lap, says, Zaidi, you know, Zaidi. Zaidi in Yiddish means grandfather. Zaidi. The grandfather, the Alter Rebbe, says, Wo is Zaidi? Where's grandfather? So the boy points to his nose and says, Das ist Zaidi, this is Zaidi. Alter Rebbe says, No, this is your grandfather's nose. Then he points to his head. He says, Das ist Zaidi, this is Zaidi, this is grandfather. He says, No, this is your grandfather's head. So the boy points to his chest. The grandfather says, No, this is your grandfather's chest. So where's your grandfather? If this is your grandfather's head, this is your grandfather's nose, this is your grandfather's chest, then where's your actual grandfather? The boy didn't answer, but he turned out to be a little smarter than his grandfather thought he was. He runs away to a different end of the room, and then from there he screams, Zaidi! The Alter Rebbe turns around, says, Oh, das ist mein Zaidi, this is my grandfather. So you understand that this boy couldn't figure out how to point to the grandfather in a way that it should be his entire grandfather. He was pointing only to one part of the grandfather. But then when he got his grandfather's attention, that was a grandfather. Everything else is just my grandfather's nose, chest, or head, or something else. But when he's paying attention to me, that's my grandfather. So what are we? We are whatever we are paying attention to. Our attention is what we are. Everything else is our nose, our forehead, or our chest, or our finger, or something else. What does it mean? It means that in reality, you have a choice how to define yourself. It's very interesting. I talk to a lot of people. My whole day is talking to people. My job, my life is talking to people. Some people work with computers, some people work with papers, some people work with machinery. Some people work with people while these people are under anesthesia. You know, I tell them that's the easiest way of working with people. But I work with people when they're actually up and awake, and actually very much so. So I work with people and I talk to people. I talk to people a lot. I talk to people usually for every occasion, for every reason, without any reason, I talk with people. And it's very easy for me to tell a lot about a person based on what he wants to speak about. And especially, I'm always interested to see how would a person define himself? What would he describe himself as? There are two people that could be having same jobs. This one is a professor in college, and that one is a professor in college. But one guy is going to mention that he's a professor in college within the first 5 minutes of any conversation he's having. He wants you to know he's a professor in college. And the other one, you can know already for a year and you wouldn't even know that he's a professor in college. He never mentioned it. Why? Because the first one is defining himself as a professor. And the other one, it's a job. I make money this way. I teach. Who cares what I do? We all define ourselves different ways to ourselves. So often you see people, this person will right away start talking about his job. That person is going to start talking about his family. That person is going to be started talking about his hobbies. I know this guy. He is a lawyer. He's actually a very talented lawyer, at least from what other lawyers say. He's a very good lawyer, and he's a partner in a major law firm. I know him for many years. I don't think he ever spoken to me once about his work. Every time we meet, he speaks about mountain climbing. He is a climber. He climbed Mount Everest. He has been a climber his whole life. As a matter of fact, he broke the record. He was the oldest person to ever go up Mount Everest. Oldest. I mean, he's not that old, but so that's his life. Mountain climbing is his life. Lawyer, well, I happen to, you know, I need to make some living. I became a lawyer and, you know, thank God I have some heads. I have some brains, so I became a good lawyer. Okay, but that's not his life. It's not his passion. It's not how he looks at himself. For him, he is a mountain climber. Why? I don't know why. That's what he decided. It's his choice. We choose how we define ourselves. And the same is true on a smaller level. Just think about it. I'm a person. I'm a human. Well, I would hope so. That's what my biology teacher in school told me. I'm a human. I'm a Jew. I'm a male. I'm a white male. I'm a father. I'm a rabbi. I'm a US citizen. I'm a Baltimorean. So I have so many different descriptions here. Which ones of them I'm really paying attention to, and which ones I'm not paying any attention to, and which ones are important to me in my life, which ones are not. The fact that I'm Baltimorean, you know what? I hope our friends with the big Baltimore pride gonna forgive me, but it's not a major factor in my life. I cannot tell you that I'm a proud Baltimorean, and every single time when I talk to somebody, I want them to know, I'm from Baltimore, you better watch out, I'm from Baltimore, you know. They say that there was a book with a motto for every city in America. Do you know what the motto for Cleveland, Ohio was? You've gotta live somewhere. Now, I used to live in Cleveland. I'm Jewish. For me, that's a huge part of my identity. For someone else, could be the other way around. He could not care less that he is Jewish, unfortunately. But the fact that he's a Baltimorean, I am a fifth generation Baltimorean, and my family grew up here, and I grew up here, and okay. For him, it's a big part of his identity. Why? We choose how we look at ourselves. With all the same factors, we could make choices about how we look at ourselves. Why is it important? Because if we have two souls, a godly soul and an animalistic soul, it is really our choice how to look at ourselves. It's up to me. Do I look at myself as a body that has a soul in it, or as a soul that has a body around it. Stephen Covey, who is not Jewish. You know Stephen Covey? He wrote this very famous book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. He wrote, we are not physical creatures on a spiritual journey. We are spiritual creatures on a physical journey. So that's how he chose to look at himself. That's for sure one of the reasons why he was so successful in many areas. But the fact is that I can look at myself as a spiritual being or as a physical being. Now, if I am choosing to look at myself as a physical being, doesn't mean I'm a bad person. No, as we said, many physical, animalistic, soul-driven things can be very good, but they're not godly. And I can have a choice. Do I look at myself as something godly, or I look at myself as something animalistic? That's my choice. In reality, unfortunately, we most of the time do not have a clear-cut, one-way perception of ourselves. It is some sort of a formula that creates what we call a balance. It could be 50-50, 60-40, 90-10. So in my life, am I 50-50? Am I 55-45? If I'm 55-45, which way 55-45? Is it 55 godly and 45 animalistic, or the other way around? And that's an important question. So I have a choice how to look at myself. You will listen to me, you'll say, well, Rabbi, I definitely want to look at myself as a spiritual being. I definitely want to look at myself as something godly. Look, even Stephen Covey said we should look at ourselves as something spiritual. If rabbis, Torah say it, that's nothing but Stephen Covey. He wrote a bestseller book, so obviously he knows what he's talking about. So how do I do that? I want to look at myself as something higher than just a body. How do I do that? Well, there's no a magic wand that I can touch you with, and you'll say, from now on, you'll be anointed to look at yourself as a soul, not as a body. Doesn't happen. It's a slow and gradual process. What is it? How do I travel down this path? The more I do things that my soul wants, my godly soul, and the more I focus on what my soul wants, the more I will be paying attention to my godly side, and the more I'll start identifying with it. I mentioned to you that I don't see being a Baltimorean as a big part of my identity. Let's say I decided that this should become a bigger part of my identity. Let's say I decided, you know what, it's not the right thing. I live here, I'm a rabbi here in the community. I need to become a better Baltimorean. How do I do that? Well, the first thing I need to do, I need to learn more about Baltimore. About Baltimore history, Baltimore's geography. I need to learn about it. Once I'll start learning about it, I'll start thinking about it more. Then I should start doing more things for Baltimore. What do Baltimore people do? They go to Oriole game, and they go to Ravens game, and they celebrate every festival over there downtown, right? So I need to do it. I need to do it. First, I might even not enjoy it. And maybe even I will see that one of these events I will enjoy better and the other one I won't. But at least I'll be trying. And slowly, maybe I'll find my little niche over there. And that's how I will start associating more with my Baltimorean self. And then, I promise you, if I do that for a while, I promise you, then the next time I will be speaking with somebody, if it's going to be somewhere, let's say, in a different country, in a different state, I will make sure to mention that I'm from Baltimore, because I want people to know I'm from Baltimore. Because I'm a proud Baltimorean. What do you mean? I know so much about our history, and I know so much about Baltimore, and I'm so invested in Baltimore, and I celebrate every Baltimore festival. The same thing goes for our spiritual self. The more I learn about my soul, the more I'll be associating myself with it. The more I do things that my soul wants, the more I will be expressing it, and the more of a spiritual self of myself I will be feeling. And then, also, the question is, how do I look at others? I mentioned Karl Marx, that he himself, being a Jew, felt this ability to be selfless, and he therefore thought that this is the norm for everyone. Well, he didn't know that it's not. Why? Because we see others only as a mirror image of ourselves and vice versa. I don't know what's going on inside of you. I will never know what's going on inside of you. But I know what's going on inside of me. And based on that, I can judge what's going on inside of you. The only way how I can relate to what you are going through in a certain situation, if I went through something similar at one point. If I don't know how chocolate tastes, I will never be able to relate to you tasting chocolate. If I look at myself as a spiritual being, now the next thing is to look at others. The next step is to look at others as spiritual beings. I see you sitting here in front of me. Do I see physical people that happen to have souls or spiritual people that happen to have bodies? Do I look at you as a soul or as a body? How important is your soul to me? And how important is your body to me? Well, if you are a model or a bodybuilder, then your body is very important to me. And your soul probably is not important to me at all. But in most of other circumstances, I can probably find reasons to relate to your soul. We know that Rabbi Akiva called the idea of loving your fellow, like yourself, the foundation of the entire Torah. You will listen to it, and you will say, one second, the Torah tells us to keep Shabbos. The Torah tells us not to eat on Yom Kippur. The Torah tells us to eat matzah on Pesach and light Hanukkah candles on Hanukkah and eat in a sukkah on Sukkot. What does it have to do with loving your fellow? How are the two connected? You might say that, you know what, the laws of the Torah that refer to my relationship with other people, they are based on loving your fellow. That's true. But what about Jewish rituals? Hearing shofar on Rosh Hashanah, what does it have to do with loving your fellow? So this is what the Alter Rebbe is writing in the book of Tanya. He says that there's really no way for me to love everyone who is near me. I have this neighbor. First of all, he's up at night and he keeps me up at night. Second of all, he parks his car blocking my driveway. And third of all, he is nasty. And fourth of all, he stinks. And I'll find so many reasons why I don't like him. How am I supposed to like him? There's no real practical way for me to start liking him. I'm looking for something good in him and I cannot find anything good in him. Nothing. You know, there are such a people. There are people you cannot find any redeeming factor. Nothing. What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to love him? So the Torah says, you know what? It is okay. Sometimes we, in a practical sense, cannot find anything that will make us love somebody. But, there's only one but. Let's say you have a girlfriend or a boyfriend who you are madly in love with. And this girlfriend or boyfriend is talking to you about their best friend. And this best friend is such a good person, so kind, helped me so much, and so funny, and so smart, and so good, and so dedicated, and so loyal, and all the good traits. You haven't met this friend yet, but you know what? If someone who you love loves him or her, this is good enough for you reason to love them. Just like they say in politics, an enemy of my enemy is my friend. So in non-political world, I guess we could also say, a friend of my friend is my friend. If somebody who I care for, if somebody who I love, loves this person, this is already a push for me to love him. I'll bring you another example. Do you know how many times I have seen families with feuds between siblings and brothers or sisters don't talk to each other, but they make up? Why? For their parents. Why? Because they both love their parents and they don't want to hurt their parents. So I love my parents. And I know my parents love my brother. Even though I hate my brother, I will start working on myself to love him just because my parents love him. And it works the other way around. I know families where husband and wife really would want to get divorced. Why don't they get divorced? Because of the kids. Because they both love their kids and know it would hurt their kids. And they work on themselves to start loving each other. Why? For their kids' sake. Someone who I love can push me towards loving someone else. So, the Alter Rebbe is asking, do you love God? Well, if you really love God, you will start loving whoever he loves. This neighbor of yours, who keeps you up at night and stinks, is also loved by God. I know you don't have a reason to love him. But guess what? If you really love God and you will realize that God loves this neighbor, then you will start loving him also. What does it mean? It means that the only way for me to love every neighbor is if I love God. If I don't love God, there's no way for me to love every. I'll love some neighbors, I won't love others. So my love to every Jew around me is a test of how much I love God. If I will be looking at people around me this way, then it's going to help me love them. But there's only one but here. The only way how I can compel myself to love my neighbor this way is because I look at my neighbor as a soul, not as a body. Because if for me my neighbor is a body, then first of all, his body is not a part of God. It is only his soul which is a part of God. So if for me my neighbor is a body and I'm a body, then there's no real reason for me to love anybody. We have a body and a soul. It is up to us to choose which way we look at our being and at other people. It is our choice how we look at ourselves and at others. It is definitely beneficial for us to look at ourselves as souls, and the Torah is giving us specific steps that we can take to help that. And every time when we do a mitzvah, and every time when we learn about our soul, this is how we become little bit more and little bit more, little bit more aware of our soul, and we are beginning to look at ourselves little bit more as a soul beings as opposed to body.